You're listening to the All Day Ruckoff Podcast, episode number 78. Welcome to the All Day Ruckoff Podcast, episode number 78. This is your host, Brian, and I wanted to thank you so much for tuning in. The All Day Ruckoff Podcast focuses on the GRT and rucking community and includes interviews, motivation, and advice to keep you informed and get you ready for your next event. This episode is about a recent HTL that happened in Indianapolis. It was run by Cadre DS and Shredder, and it had a huge, huge service component to it. I had talked to DS when he was out here for a custom tough event, and he had mentioned some of the things that he was planning on doing. So I knew I wanted to watch this event to see what happened. And I'm just so thankful that Andy was able to join me for this call. Not only was this his first HTL event, but it was also his first heavy. So he's got a lot of awesome perspective there. Like I said, this was an incredibly unique Go Ruck experience. So I really hope you enjoy this interview. Before we get into the interview, as always, I would love to give some thanks to those who have left a review on either iTunes or on our Facebook page. This week, we have a 5-star review on iTunes from Santorelli3. Great podcast. Just finished the Cliff podcast, episode 60. As always, great guest and interesting conversation about a corner of the rucking community I didn't know about. One thing to consider for a future episode is an in-depth discussion about the peanut butter and bacon burger that you mentioned as a self-treat for completing challenges. Yes, a whole episode. Need to know more about that. Seriously though, keep up the good work. Thank you so much, Santorelli3, for taking the time to write that. I had an amazing time talking to Cliff when we had him on for episode 60. It was an awesome episode, so if you haven't listened to that one yet, I would definitely dig into the backlog. It's worth searching back for it. The peanut butter and bacon burger is amazing. And I think the only way to dedicate a full episode to it would be to do an in-person podcast episode where the guest and I eat the burgers and then talk about Go Ruck stuff. So maybe when a cadre makes it out to Seattle, we might have to figure something out, get the crew together, eat some peanut butter and bacon burgers, and record a live episode. Final updates before we get into the interview. The knit hats that we just released in a green and black color. Green sold out super quick. Black, there's only a handful left. We are restocking those. They are amazing for cold weather, really cold weather. They will heat up your head. They're one of those hats you pull out for a midnight ruck. You know, you're trying to get the Pathfinder challenge in, and it will keep your head warm. We're working with the company right now to manufacture a hat that is slightly less warm. So that might make people who are in the warmer states, the people who don't get their winters down to 30 degrees, a little bit happier, because the knit that we've got right now is great for the freezing cold weather, but it will definitely heat up your head if you wear it when it's 50 degrees out or warmer. Thank you so much for the support. And here is the interview with Andy. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Still fighting off the last effects of the cold air over the weekend.
I can imagine. You spent quite a bit of time out there in it.
It was our first big cold blast for the winter around here, and unfortunately it was the same weekend. So it was like down to 20 at night with the wind chill down in the single digits.
Oh my gosh. And I mean, you know Go Ruck, they're famous for bringing in the weather.
Oh man. Yeah, no, I mean, we were fortunate there was no rain. But Cadre DS got to enjoy some snow flurries in the middle of the night while we were doing one of our movements through town. So
lucky him and lucky you guys.
Yeah, that's what I told him. I said, I'm just glad it's snow, not rain.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like freezing rain.
Oh, Yeah. Yep.
So thank you again for taking the time. I reached out to Bill and he tossed your name out there as someone that I should reach out and talk to about the HTL. He said that was your first HTL?
Yeah. Yep. That was my first heavy.
That's what he said. First heavy too. I mean, I hear that's a good way to do it because I haven't done an HTL, but I have done a heavy. And after my heavy, I said, you know, never again. But that was a couple of years ago. So I'm trying to scratch the itch. But I hear if you just get it all done together at the same time, then you should be good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what, you know, obviously I think you talked to Doug Schwerin here not too long ago.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So I work with Doug. So he was the one kind of, I told him I was planning on doing this heavy and then he kind of prodded me over the line on going ahead and just doing the HTL.
You should know not to trust Doug. He thinks selection's a good idea.
No. Yep. Oh, believe me, he didn't say too much about what his workouts entailed, but there's a lot of things he thinks are good ideas. They're really, really bad.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. I mean, I've only talked to him that one time, but he, over the phone, he undersells a lot of stuff, especially the way he talks and describes it. When we were talking, when we were talking about the PT test, he said something about how he finished the numbers in roughly a minute. It wasn't sure if he could stop or not. So he you know, banged out another 8 or 10 push-ups and then time was up. And he just kind of nonchalantly moved through that. And I was thinking in my head, like, you got the numbers in a minute? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, whoa, can we rewind to this real quick? I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yep. Yep. Well, he trained, like I said, I mean, the interview, he kind of played it pretty low key, but the amount of training, the volume he was doing and the stuff he was doing, it was unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely what it sounded like. He said in some cases, 3 workouts a day. And I mean, huge volume.
Yep. Yeah. And it wasn't like, I just went out and rucked in the morning. It was, you know, he'd gone out with a heavy ruck, maybe done a run, done some hill work, done work with sandbags. You know, it was a, you know, good hour and a half.
Yeah, not 3 easy workouts a day.
Mm-mm. Not at all, no.
So did he get you into Go Ruck, or did you guys kind of get into this at the same time, or how'd that whole thing go since you worked together?
Yeah, so basically the same time. He and I have worked together at the same company since 2001. So, you know, I'd kind of cross paths with him again, you know, off and on. We'd go on different programs and kind of work in different areas. But I'd say 2014, I kind of happened to cross back paths and started talking to him about it. And I was just starting to try to get back into shape and work out and stuff. And he, you know, suckered me into doing a Spartan race. Tried to leave me for dead in Milwaukee. but it was shortly after that there was a friend of mine that's a friend of both of ours now, Amy Dixon. She just did that star course with him down in Jacksonville. He had already been going and doing the Team Ninja workouts, you know, with Bill. And she's been her son and one of my kids went to high school together. And so we already knew Amy really well. And she kept telling me, oh, you really ought to try this Go Ruck stuff. And I happened to talk with Doug about it and he had been looking into it too. And so we both started doing the Team Ninja workouts once a week. And we both did our first light, you know, together with that, Cadre Dakota and, you know, like 8 inches of freshly fallen snow. But Doug just, you know, it wasn't too long after that. I mean, he talked about his interview. He did that, you know, Brian Squared Tough here in Indy. And, you know, after that, Doug just started taking it all to a whole nother level.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to go after selection.
Oh, yeah.
But for you, So you did that first event with Doug, and then between then and now, it's 2018. We're in November. You just finished your first HTL. What did your event schedule kind of look like? Did you dive in like he did, or did you do one event a year?
I didn't dive in like he did. I did a tough light. Well, I signed up for a tough light in June of 2015, and I finished the tough. That was my first tough with Jesse and Machine, and I just got annihilated through the tough, and then made the mistake of using that 5-hour break between to go grab a little sleep, and when my alarm went off after a couple of hours, I was a physical wreck. I mean, it sounds horribly wimpy, but I'd never, that tough was just way beyond anything. At the time I was doing like one ruck workout a week, and then doing some other, going to the gym and, doing a little lifting and stuff. So I really had not, even though we'd done the one light, I still hadn't really calibrated properly for what a tough might entail. So I after that, tried to start stepping it up a little bit, doing a little more. 2016, I did, 3 or 4 toughs. I did multiple toughs in 2016. 2017, I did a few, and then I had to dial it back because by the end of 2017, I knew I had some shoulder issue going on. So basically this time last year, I'd just gotten my left rotator cuff reattached.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah. So I've had my right one done 8 years ago. So I kind of knew what was going on, knew what to expect. And actually this time around, even though they had to do a lot more work on this other one, because I was already in pretty good shape going into it, the recovery time was much quicker. But because of that, I basically didn't do any events pretty much for the first part of this year. And then in August, Cadre Shredder came in to Indy and did the Extortion 1-7 Tough Light. And so did that event and loved it. I really thought a lot of Cadre Shredder. I haven't met a bad Cadre yet, but I was really, really impressed with how much effort and detail he put into planning for his event.
Shredder really gets into the historical events and the events that are based around something. So I did Baton Light with him out here, and I've just heard nothing but amazing things about events with him, especially ones like that, like Extortion, those kind of events. So it's great to hear that you had a similar time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it was good because I was pretty, at that time I was still only signed up for the heavy. I was still resisting all of Doug's prodding, but after doing the tough flight, I felt a lot more comfortable about the heavy. It wasn't easy. I mean, I told Shredder at the end of the Extortion event, I told him he's kind of an evil genius for some of the way he was arranging weights and tying stuff together and just making it, nearly impossible to carry stuff. But I like the way he would run and operate the event, and the way he really seemed to have a knack for getting the most out of people.
Your first attempt at a tough light, you took a nap in the middle, and that, I mean, I've taken naps after events too. I mean, your body just kind of like seizes up, and it gets, you feel the full effects of that event.
Yeah.
What did you do between the tough light for Extortion?
Me and another guy I work with that works with Doug and I, he and I went and did, used our company showers because we basically worked downtown. So anyway, we went and got cleaned up. His wife came and picked us up, went out someplace, got some breakfast, refueled, went back, got our kits ready and got all our gear ready. And, we showed up at the start point. Weather was great. So we showed up at the start point about an hour early, went ahead and moved the flagpole over and got it set up. And you know, kind of kicked back and, you know, laid on the hillside for, you know, 15, 20 minutes. Maybe took a little bit of a nap that way, but, you know, nothing like, you know, what I'd done after that first one. I mean, I full on climbed into a hotel room bed and, oh, I'll get a couple hours sleep. And yeah, my body said no.
Yeah.
It was ugly. But, so yeah, for that extortion tough light, yeah, I just, you know, took a little cat nap, maybe laying on the ground at the start point, nothing else.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan. That's what I did between my tough light and my last tough I did was a shower, kind of get refreshed, and you can kind of, yep, you kind of trick your body into pretending you woke up already and that, you know, you didn't just do an event.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the key. And I did the same thing. We've been going for the last few years, going up and doing the Snowdrop event, you know, the charity fundraiser that Rooney sets up.
Absolutely.
And, you know, last year, not the one, or, you know, a month or two ago, but the one he did in 2017, he decided to add a tough to that one. And so we did, you know, Doug, myself, and Bill did the tough, and it, you know, I felt bad for Cadre Flash. It rained the entire night. And, you know, we were just all exhausted after that. But kind of the same thing there. Went back to the hotel, got a shower, got kind of refreshed, got some dry clothes on, you know, ate some food, and then headed for the start point. You know, no napping, no laying down. Yoga. Yeah, I should mention yoga. Definitely did some, I picked up on that little thing of trying to do some good stretching in between too.
It's unbelievable how much that helps with recovery. I mean, maybe it's believable for people who do it often, but when I first started doing yoga, I was shocked with how it helped between events, after events, mm-hmm, just everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I would even try to, you know, if we were at a break point, like this heavy, doing this heavy, especially with the cold, because the cold just sucks the energy out of you. Makes everything, all your joints stiff and sore. So I would, any time there was an opportunity, I would try to do a little bit of stretching, a little bit of, you know, a couple different yoga poses to help keep limbered up.
That's good advice. I did it at the Star Course, and that seemed to help out quite a bit.
Oh yeah, I bet.
So this recent heavy tough light that Cadre DS and Shredder came out for, I had talked, mm-hmm, to DS in Seattle. He was out at a custom tough maybe 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And he told me what he had in store. And it sounded like it was going to be an awesome event and a pretty big surprise. How much advance warning on what you guys were going to be doing did you get over there in Indy?
The only clue that we had, or clues, a couple months ago, probably about the time, you know, right after you talked to him, he posted a photo of, I think it was he and maybe, I don't know if it was Ragnar or another guy. But anyway, he posted a photo of himself down by the river, you know, and you could see downtown Indy in the backdrop of the photo. And, you know, he put a message out there on the heavy page, said, hey, you guys need to get more people. You need to get all hands on deck. You know, we've got a mission for you. This is going to be huge. You need to get everybody you can. You know, he really pumped it up. And then this last week, one of the other guys in our the Team Ninja group, workout group, who had been in contact with him about start points and stuff, messaged him about team weight. And, you know, asking, hey, is this okay? You know, can we use this, that? And, DS got back with him and said, no, I want you to bring 25 pounds of axes. And we were all kind of, you know, kind of taken aback, like, what? You're going to let us swing axes? So that was the directive from DS, was you need to get, you know, you figure it out, but I want 25 pounds of axes. That's going to be your team weight. Like, okay. That's unique.
Unique, very specific. And
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but even then, it was like still, couldn't quite. I mean, there's a lot of trees and a lot of growth in certain areas over by White River near downtown, but trying to connect the dots on what exactly are we going to clear out, and where.
Yeah,
I just couldn't really wrap my head around what it was we were going to be doing, what the mission was. So
yeah, or even if you would be clearing something out, or if you'd be trekking out to some, some rural area and cutting something down, or there's a lot of things you can do with an axe.
yep.
Wow. So you were signed up for the heavy. How far before the event did you commit to the tough and the light?
Terminator selection was what, like mid September? It was about a week before selection because of myself and a couple other guys. We went up and met Doug at a park up on the north side of town, and it was kind of like the last. I think it was like the last hard push workout. So one of the guys met him there at like 5 a.m. to do a 12-mile ruck march. And then myself and a cousin of mine, Art Copeland, we showed up at like 8 o'clock in the morning. And I mean, it's a cold, drizzly, 50-degree kind of morning. And we showed up at this park, and Jason Shockey, the other guy, had just finished the 12-mile ruck march with Doug. And so as soon as they got done, I was like, okay, get a drink of water. All right, come over here. And then we kind of put him through like a little welcome party thing, bear crawls and sandbag drags and, PT and other stuff, and put him through that for like an hour and a half, and finished it with like hill runs with rucks, multiple rucks and multiple sandbags. And it was phenomenal. We finished the workout. Of course, we're doing part of it with him too. And he's been there since 5 a.m. He's been carrying the heaviest ruck of any of us, and he was still smoking us on all the hill work.
It's amazing.
So,
and that's got a great group over there. It's really nice. Send someone out there early, work him in the morning, mm-hmm. and then kind of trade him off.
Yeah.
The other group gets to work him in the later morning.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. No, it's been neat. I mean, it's been a really neat journey from that, like January 2015, the first time, went into Team Ninja, evening workout and met Bill and Carly and a lot of that group. And then, to where it's gone now, to where, a lot of us travel together to events, or, agree on what events we're going to do locally and how we're going to, what's going to be the support team to help with that event. Like this heavy, tough light, Bill's wife, Carly, my wife, Shannon, they did a lot getting us to the start point, picking us up at Index after the heavy, getting us back to the hotel, having food, hot food already ready. My wife keeping me from talking myself out of going back. it was really neat. And then, a lot of the other people we've, done these workouts with here locally, were also there, several others that were doing the heavy, tough light, and then others that would come in, and, some came in for the tough, and then there were a good number of people that came in and did the light, kind of the finisher with us too. So
that's really fun. And that's so nice to have such a great support team behind you for the HTL. I mean, you're pretty, pretty beat after a heavy, and not having to worry about, grabbing your clean clothes, getting food, just having someone there to aid you in all that. It's, mm-hmm. It's gotta be great to, you save energy, you save, mental capacity. You don't have to worry about it. That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It made a huge difference.
So we've touched slightly on what happened at this heavy and at the HTL. 25 pounds of axes for the team weight. What did you guys actually do with those axes?
Yeah, so we get, we get over to the river, you know, after a lot of trickery between Shredder and DS on what we're actually going to go do. You know, they had us set thinking we were getting ready to head off on the 12-mile ruck march, and that we were going to have to keep pace with DS the whole time.
Oh.
So, yeah. So that already, you know, there was some panic, at least in my mind, on trying to do 12 miles at his pace. But anyway, we get over to the river, and they're like, okay, here's what we're going to do, and they break out. And so one of the kit bags we took over was actually handsaws. So we have the bag that we bought with the team weight, which is a bunch of axes, and then we got these handsaws. And they got us down by the river edge, and there's kind of a concrete wall at the very bottom, and then it's, you know, pretty well maintained grass hillside that's at a good, I don't know, probably at least a 40 degree slope. It's pretty steep. And it goes up, you know, 20, 25 yards, 30 yards, and then comes up to street level. And basically laid out, and I said, all right, you guys are going to get down there, and you can take your rucks off if you're down there working on cutting trees or hacking on trees, because there's only a few feet between the wall and the water. And there's, you know, silt and mud have washed up on the riprap rocks, and you got to really watch where you step, or you end up sliding and falling in the water. And with the temperature the way it was, that's not going to end well. So basically, I said, some of you get down there with the tools, start cutting and hacking. You know, safety first. Don't be swinging axes too close to people or whatever. But start hacking out all these trees. And, you know, the trees weren't, I'd say, like the biggest trees were maybe 8 or 10 inch diameter. And that was a lot of, you know, little sapling, you know, 2-inch, 3-inch type stuff. But basically, it just, you know, turned us loose on there like a, you know, like a big old cloud of locusts to start ripping out, cutting out all these trees. And then the other part of us, anybody that wasn't down in there next to that cutting, was basically on the bank and taking all the branches with your ruck on still and lugging it up that hillside, which, like I said, that hillside was steep. I don't know if you've seen the pictures, you know, that those guys shared or video, but, you know, it was a pretty good little hump going up and down the hill. So we basically, you know, got over there and got squared away on that, and that's what we camped out and did for probably a good hour or two.
And that's, I mean, that's a lot of work just going up and down hills.
Oh, man. I told other people about it afterwards. I said, you know, that was more taxing going up and down those hills, hand sawing, you know, through, you know, 3-inch or bigger trees with the little hand saws, swinging an axe, you know, hacking on the bigger ones. That all that was way more work than, you know, okay, we're going to do a welcome party and I'm going to get you guys a PT for an hour. I think it smoked everybody way more getting down there and doing all that and then humping that stuff up and down the hill to the designated dump piles.
Yeah.
And we were doing it for, like I said, it was like an hour or two that we were over there working on that. And with it being cold too, you really had to watch, you know, your body temperature, you know, keep tabs on how your feet are doing, your hands. You know, you didn't want to get sweaty doing that. So you had to really, really watch your layering and, you know, open up your jacket a little bit when you had time. Or, you know, if we stopped for any length of time, you had to really watch that you didn't start getting too cold. Or
yeah, it's one of those things with the winter events. You have to pay really close attention to that you don't maybe in the spring, fall, and summer in some spots. And then the other thing about just carrying the stuff up and down the hill, I mean, if you're just rucking with a sandbag, you can get it in a good spot, you can get a good feeling for it, and you can put the miles down. But if you're, you know, carrying this stuff up a hill, you drop it, you go back down, and you have a whole nother bundle that carries differently, I mean, you can't ever settle into that.
Nope. Nope, it was, you know, constantly changing. You know, you got stuff that you're having to just get a good grip on it and drag it, you know, because even the stuff that was only 3 inches around at the base, you know, it's still 20 foot long. So, I mean, you're basically just dragging this stuff up there. It was funny because by, you know, we did that for a while, and then Shredder left, and then DS took us on a mission to go acquire more equipment. You know, the way they laid this out, they said, all right, you know, it's Veterans Day. You guys are going to go prepare the beachhead for an amphibious assault landing. And he said, your mission is a beachhead cleared. And so we get over there. Oh, okay, we're clearing out all these trees. Well, then as we were working it, you know, after Shredder left, he said, okay, how could this go quicker? You know, what kind of equipment could we use to go quicker? I tell you what, there's an equipment drop, and, you know, in usual GORUCK fashion, he, you know, drug a couple people over, pulled out a map, said, here's where you got to get to, plan your route. You know, we humped it like 5 miles across town to go over, and they'd stashed a chainsaw and over there for us. Oh, and some sandbags. So we get the chainsaw, great, but now we've also acquired 5 sandbags. So we humped that back across, and then did some more work. And then even with the chainsaw, we get back over. Well, now the chainsaw won't run. He says, okay, well, why won't it run? Well, we don't have fuel. Oh, okay. So now we go on our next mission. Our next mission is to go acquire fuel. And he stashed the fuel can somewhere. So we, you know, racked up some miles. We're carrying sandbags with us now. And all our kit. Because we weren't leaving the axes or saws or anything anywhere. Yeah. And I should probably mention, I don't want to pick on my teammates too much, but I'll just say we overachieved on our 25 pounds of axes. some of the guys got a little exuberant, and when the kit bag did show up at the start point, it probably weighed pretty close to 50 of axes and mauls, you know, splitting mauls, and yeah, there's a variety in there, but it was we easily exceeded the 25 pound requirement.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. And that went with us everywhere. Got carried everywhere.
Oh, yeah. You don't want someone to take that. Don't want the wrath of DS if that thing gets stolen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No.
That is a really cool way that he did that. He had mentioned when I was talking to him that he was going to be doing these kind of missions to get better equipment for the task at hand. But, I mean, that's really fun. And that's a really unique way to run an event.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool the way you set that up. Yeah. And then we got some more work in on that. So, I mean, we've been, you know, through most of the night, if we haven't been moving to get equipment, we've been working on this hillside. And it was probably about sunrise that he said, okay. And, you know, we're actually going to stash some of this gear. So now we actually did stash sandbags and axes and everything but the chainsaw got stashed away, because it is actually DS's chainsaw. So everything but the chainsaw got stashed and hidden away. And then we had to go to a designated point downtown. And that's when Shredder come in, and they kind of tagged in and out with each other. And that was when Shredder informed us we were going to do our 12-mile timed movement.
So you guys weren't able to escape that.
Well, and typical fashion too. I mean, he really set it up. He's like, hey, there's a standard, we're going to go back to old school GORUCK. If you don't meet the standard, you know, there may be performance drops. You know, he started really pushing it. Hey, I don't care if you guys have been working all night. Yeah. You're all smoked. Yeah. That's great. Guess what? There's still a standard. What's the standard? 17 and a half net miles. Okay. Well, that's what you're going to do. So. But then what he did is he broke it up, and he said, all right, you're going to do it in 3 mile increments. And, you know, he had another plan going there, because he had us actually go down to this old cemetery. And of course we did it wrong the first time. So we had to go back to the point we started at and repeat that. Well, you know, add it up. Now you got 9 miles. So we get back to the cemetery in the correct fashion the second time. And then he took us up and was showing us some of the old, you know, marker monuments in there, because, I mean, it's one of the older cemeteries around town. So there's, you know, markers for the Sons of Erin, the Irish Sons of Erin, and the regiment they were in for the Civil War. Then we went over to another marker area for a Medal of Honor recipient from the Civil War, you know, in his gravesite, and, you know, the graves of his family members that are buried around him, you know. So he's given us kind of a little bit of a history lesson there with those guys. It was pretty cool.
there's a lot more baked into this event than I even realized.
Oh man. Yeah. And then, you know, from there he basically said, okay, you know, we've already got 9 miles in. He goes, actually, your last movement's going to be 4 miles. You're going to do a 13 mile or not a 12. And so then he gave us our final time hack and destination. And, you know, Bill and another one of our local guys, Frankie, just knocked it out of the park as far as navigating. I mean, they got us, you know, around some intersections, some key intersections, and got us over onto the river trail. And that was just humping it back to our, basically our work site along the river. And, you know, that probably put us about, I mean, it's really hard keeping track of time, but I would say I put us probably somewhere around midday on Saturday, because we'd started the whole ruck marching thing probably at sun up, and that would have been around 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. So by the time we had finished the history lesson at the cemetery, you know, gotten water, you know, done all that kind of stuff, it was probably midday, at least noon, maybe 1 o'clock when we got back to the river. And then they basically put us on a mission to clear out some additional sections. You know, all said and done, between the heavy and the tough, we cleared almost a mile-long stretch along the riverbank.
That is a ton of work.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Yep. And that's not even, you know, and that was, you know, just the river clearing there. You know, of course, he got toward the end of it, there's one area where some stuff washed up and trapped by some of those trees next to the bank. And of course, one of the things trapped there was like an 800-pound log that ended up, of course, you know, that couldn't just be left alone. That had to be stood up.
Of course.
became a team weight that ended up having to go back to the index for the heavy, which put our heavy over by about 45 minutes.
That'll do it.
Yeah, it was not a fast mover with that log. That took, basically, as we're for the heavy class, I think we were down to like 24 by that point. And between the log, the sandbags, all the gear, you know, gas can now, we got a 5 gallon, you know, jerry can of gas for this chainsaw. We got the chainsaw, you know, the flag. Pretty much there's nobody with empty hands. You're either under the log or you're carrying one of the other pieces. And then, you know, okay, we swap out and get a different group under the log. And then those guys would come back and carry the other kit.
And a lot of that stuff you're carrying isn't stuff that you can just sling over your shoulders, you know, carry on your back, just kind of be crazy with. Like, you know, when you're rucking with a sandbag, you throw it over your shoulders, you shift it around, you do a little jump to rearrange it. I mean, if you got a bag of axes, you got to be careful.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we, you know, at the start it was all good intention. You know, one of the guys had made a bunch of guards to cover the blades and tried to get them so they'd be secured on there. But, you know, after all the different movements and unloading, you know, now you've got where guards aren't staying on. Some of the axes were pretty sharp. And so they've actually cut through the bag. One of the straps on the bag is broken now, so you can't even use shoulder straps like it was designed for. So essentially you're kind of getting it up on one shoulder and kind of trying to hold it with both hands across the back of your shoulders and trying not to make sure you get an axe blade, you know, dug into you.
Right. And I bet the person behind you is a little nervous too, that the bag's going to collapse. It's like when you're driving down the freeway and the truck in front of you hasn't properly secured their load. And you're like, oh my gosh, just please, please do not let all of this dump out on my car.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. That was actually, you know, usually if you're behind the guy carrying the axe bag, you kind of kept an eye on, you know, hey, does anything look like it's about to fall out? You know, so nobody gets a toe smashed or something.
Yeah. Or, you know, cut off.
Or chopped off. Yeah. Yep.
Make for quite the heavy story.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a man. I mean, it was, I don't know how many man hours we logged in on clearing the river area for the heavy, but it was a lot. And then, you know, all said and done with the miles of going to pick equipment up and, you know, getting our 12/13 mile in and everything, I think we came in right about 35 miles, I think is what we had. It may have been up to the 40, but I think the estimate was like 35.
That is impressive.
A lot of work.
Yeah. When I was talking to DS about it, one of my wasn't really a concern, but one of the first things I thought was, if you're spending all your time clearing out trees and logs, then how are you going to get the rucking in? And then he brought up the emissions. I was like, oh, there it is. And so, and one thing that really, really struck me as something that was awesome about this event was, I mean, the PT and the workouts, that wasn't just, you know, you pressing against the ground or you doing squats. It was you and your team doing something good for the city.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think everybody, I heard zero grumbling. I mean, everybody, once we kind of were told what we're doing, everybody bought in. And then I tell you, this guy, cool. I forgot about this, to really seal the deal. So when we came back, the whole weekend's a blur. So that midday Saturday, we finished our 13 mile and now we're back over at the river. And this is the first time we're getting to see it during the day. You know, we've been working it at night. Now we're getting to see it in the daylight. And, you know, one, you could really see how far we'd already gotten. That was cool, seeing how much work we'd gotten done. Two, Shredder has now gotten the guy he originally connected with, that got this whole ball rolling. That guy, I think his name Greg, is now down there, and he's kind of talking to us and telling us, here's what the vision is for this area. Here's what's going on. Here's how, you know, this tree line has kind of been a symbolic, but yet also a very physical marker line between downtown Indianapolis and kind of the lower income other side of the river, you know, literally. Area. And he's talking about how, you know, because it's not maintained along that riverbank, that, you know, there's all kinds of fishing that could be going on there. You know, there's people also now looking down further down the road about how they can develop it for like kayaking and tubing and, you know, create more of a thing, something like you'd see in Austin, Texas, or, you know, where people actually utilize that river. You know, and you see all kinds of boat, you know, people out there canoeing, kayaking, tubing, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that really, I mean, that kind of rejuvenated everybody. I mean, not that nobody was complaining or griping about the project, and everybody was like, yeah, this sounds cool. But that guy coming down and telling us about the bigger picture, you know, the vision for that area, it was like, wow, okay.
Gives you some renewed energy after spending over 24 hours working at it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, for the Tough, we actually, they took us through town first. So we went to, like, you know, the state capitol, did some stuff there. Oh, with the log. So now we're moving the log with the Tough group. So we, you know, we rucked it, you know, humped that thing over to the state capitol. And then we went to the, USS Indianapolis, memorial marker on our canal walk. Which if you ever get into Indy has an extraordinary number of memorial sites, but, you know, side point. But, we went over to USS Indianapolis Memorial, you know, Shredder laid out a lot of the history there and then gave us a good, you know, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes or so, you know, independent time to really walk around the memorial marker and read the entire story and background, you know, at least what could fit on the marker. About that ship and, you know, the role it played in the war. You know, it's the ship that delivered the nuclear bombs. And then it was totally forgotten about after it, you know, it delivered them to port. You know, of course, the rest is history about those bombs actually being delivered, right?
Yep.
Off the plane. And in the aftermath of that, people lost within the Navy, literally lost track of, hey, where's the Indianapolis at? Where's the ship at? And so it got hit by a Japanese torpedo, and then the guys were left. I can't remember how many days they were left, you know, out there bobbing around in the Pacific, getting annihilated by sharks, and, you know, a lot of them were injured in the explosion of the ship. And, you know, it was a bad deal. I think there were only like 316 survivors out of, you know, 800 and some odd men.
So, I had no clue.
We got to spend some time there. Yeah, we got there's some really good books written on it. But we got to spend a good amount of time there and talking about that history. And then, of course, we did some PT and remembrance of the, you know, for the survivors and a typical shredder. We got to sing the Star Spangled Banner under a bridge. So we got a good echo of our for singing there. And then after that, we started on another maneuver basically to get over to the river. And I think at some point he stashed the log somewhere downtown for future classes to use.
Yeah.
There's a lovely, whoever does a Go Ruck event in Indianapolis next, you can look forward to finding a 800-pound log at some point in the night.
Lucky them.
I guarantee that. Yeah, I about guarantee that. But then the tough class got the privilege of going over, you know, get over to the river and, okay, we got this stretch left to do. And, you know, he kind of laid it out for us, what needs to get done, how it's got to happen. And, of course, now we got like 45 people working it. So it went pretty quick. You know, he still got a lot of people that were, I think there were 15 of us that actually went through all three events. So it's pretty easy for us to kind of lay out and show people at the tough event, you know, that didn't do the heavy, hey, here's what we're doing, here's how we're doing it. So we knocked it out pretty quick. And then we got the bonus surprise. There was another stretch a little further up the river that we went to. And this one, we weren't actually chopping, cutting, sawing anything. It was just an area where there's kind of a flat little plateau area down by the river that they want to make into kind of an amphitheater. And so he said part of the problem is they can't get equipment in it right now because most recent flooding or high waters have washed a lot of logs up in the area. And they're all jumbled and tangled together. And so basically we just went through that thing like a human bulldozer, picking up logs and setting them over to the side and moving them away, and created about a 10-foot wide path that they could drive equipment through so they could get back in there and do whatever work it is they want to do. And, you know, and that was, we probably did that for about a quarter of a mile.
It's just a ton of work.
Yeah. Still a lot. Again, you know, just, you know, okay, we're not doing PT, but what are we doing? Oh, we're picking up and moving logs.
It's like, so. It's essentially PT with a purpose.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, exactly. I'm sure at some points you're just begging for flutter kicks.
Yeah.
Can we just not do this for a second and, I don't know, do flutter kicks, do squats, please?
Yeah. But it was neat. I mean, those guys, you know, those guys. So, you know, Shredder and DS did a phenomenal job just kind of how they planned it and metered it out. And they were saying afterwards too, they were blown away. They kind of had their own game plan of, you know, they wanted to do at a minimum, make sure they got the river clearing part done. The secondary job or the bonus job that we got at going down there and kind of clearing a path and moving logs out of the way, they weren't real sure how that was going to go or if we'd even get to it. And then they were totally blown away by that when we did get to it, we didn't just, you know, get part of it done. We actually got the whole thing knocked out and we're ready to go do some more movements.
Yeah. And I'm just so happy to hear that everyone really bought into the plan that they had.
Yeah.
I was worried that people would feel, because obviously I'd heard about it when we were out at the Tough event, but whenever there's changes or whenever there's, you know, something that you don't really expect, sometimes people can feel shortchanged or like they didn't get the full event experience. But it really seems like they delivered a full event and then some, and on top of it all, did a ton of good for the city.
Oh yeah, I mean the icing on the cake. So we'd already had the one guys come out and talk to us about the vision for the area and, you know, thanking us for our work. On Sunday afternoon during the light, basically the light class, everybody, you know, we all, you know, went through the usual chaotic welcome party thing. And then we moved out and went back over to the river. When we get to the river, there's a local bait shop, right there next to the river. And I'd never, you know, I'd I'm from around here and I've never really paid much attention to what's over there. And this guy came over and he was just so excited, so ecstatic. And he, you know, he's got Shredder's attention. He's like, hey, can I bother you guys for a little bit? And I mean, he just couldn't say enough about how excited he was about how we had opened up that mile stretch and how much that was going to change, you know, for them to have people that could come over and now fish off the bank, or even fishing from boats without getting hung up in all these trees and everything, and how much difference that was going to make to that area. To the point which he then turned around and he said, this bait shop's been here 68 years, you know, this is so huge. He said, every one of you guys, you go over there to my bait shop. You want a soda, you want a, you know, a donut, a candy bar, whatever you want, it's on the house.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's just hearing about it is exciting, but just being there and seeing his excitement, I mean, that must have been just huge for the class and just driving home again that what you're doing is important. And it's just nice to do good things for good people. And that's just so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It was phenomenal. So, I mean, basically, you know, aside from that little break, the light class was basically like a giant vacuum cleaner coming in after everything had gone on with all the tree cutting. So essentially we, you know, they came in armed with gloves and trash bags and basically policed the bank, policed, you know, right down to the edge of the water, all the way up to the street and sidewalk, picking up every scrap of trash you could find. And then went on down to the other area where we'd just moved logs out of the way. And, you know, that area had a lot of trash and garbage tossed around too. And we went through that area and, you know, probably had enough there to fill the back of a pickup truck bed, you know, got it all bagged up and set out to where it could be collected. So it's pretty phenomenal. And I mean, he didn't, you know, a lot of times you think about the light and you think, okay, you know, they say light doesn't equal easy. Yeah, we'll get some hard work, but for the most part, it's going to be, you know, we're going to have some fun, take some selfies, you know,
yeah,
ruck around a little bit and have a good time. And holy cow, he, you know, we got through with that trash pickup and, you know, you could tell by the, you know, where the sun is and, you know, it's like, yeah. He said we were only going to go by about 4 hours. We started 2 o'clock, sunset in about 6. It looks like it's getting ready to set. We're probably going to head back now. And oh man, he comes over, gets team lead. He's like, all right, I want you to go to here. And you know, next thing you know, we're going the complete opposite direction of the start point. and with the time hack that we got to meet, you know, and with the, you know, we still got all this kit and gear and stuff. It's like, what the heck? So we end up going to some park and getting there like after dark. And the last part of our mission was that we had to accomplish a hostage rescue. Of course, the hostage was, you know, sandbags carabinered together like a stick figure.
Of course, it can't be something easy.
No. Oh, no. So, yeah. So that was the finisher of the light was a probably a solid 1 hour fast paced movement to go 3 miles. With these sandbags all linked together, you know, in that arrangement, to get to index. So it was not a, easy light by any stretch of the imagination. It was a good hard push.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. And you mentioned that there were about 15 people who did all three events.
Yeah. We had about, I think it was 15 that did the full HTL.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
And I guess if you show up and you do the heavy, I mean, what they're delivering is such a unique experience. You kind of feel compelled to come back and see what's next, right?
Yeah. looking at it right now, yes, absolutely. Sounds so awesome. Yeah, we finished that heavy up and with that log movement back to the park, I was trashed, you know, and Bill and I'd gotten a hotel room downtown. Like I said, our wives, you know, got us shuttled over there and, you know, so we're getting cleaned up and getting some food. And I really, mentally, had a big struggle between the heavy and the tough. know, just it seemed like every time I'd move anything, I'd get, you know, my forearm would cramp. I'd go to scratch my head and my bicep would cramp, you know, and it was just, you know, your feet are pretty rough. None of us had blisters, I don't think, but, you know, still your feet are for feeling the effects of being on them and moving and carrying weight for 24 plus hours.
Yeah.
But there's kind of a point in there. It's like, okay, started thinking a little more clearly about, you know, the purpose and, you know, what we're there to do to honor, you know, we're doing, you know, it's Veterans Day event. We're there to honor veterans. You know, we've each picked out a veteran that was important in our lives that we're honoring, you know, with doing this. And, you know, finally switch kind of flipped finally. And it's like, all right, you know, physically after that, it's like, shit, we got to the start point for the tough. And I was literally like bouncing, ready to go. I mean, I felt great. I felt physically like I had prepared very well for what we had to do. The mental part in between events, in between the heavy and the tough, was probably the weakest point for me.
Yeah, it really isn't three events, right? It's one. You have to look at it as one giant event, the HTL, because that time between those events can be just as challenging in some regards as the actual events.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Cause I mean, it's the one thing that, you know, you're getting that break, and then it's the other thing when you get into that break and you're like, wait a minute, that means we're going to go back and, you know, you let your mind wander into the, well, what are they going to do? Are we going to do this? Are they going to do that? Oh, I hope they don't do this. And, I think it was, Goggins, David, I don't know if you've ever seen him or listen to any of his stuff. So David Goggins is a former SEAL. And he now does a lot of ultra marathons and just insane endurance events. And, you know, and he's done things like set the record for the most pull-ups in 24 hours, you know, crazy stuff. But he had some really good, advice that he shares a lot on Instagram. And one of his things was, hey, you know, you don't let your mind wander to all those other things that you don't know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen or what. He said, all you do is you focus on what you're doing at that exact moment. So, okay, we're rucking 3 miles. All right. Well, the only thing I'm thinking about during that entire ruck is moving one foot in front of the other, rucking 3 miles. That's it. You know, we're clearing brush and I'm hauling stuff up and down this steep, this crazy steep hill in the middle of the night, trying not to, you know, the grass is starting to frost over, so it's getting slick. All right, the only thing I'm thinking about is my next trip up the hill. That's it.
That's great advice.
It's that breaking it down and only focusing on that one moment. You know, even the welcome party, you know, I think we did a deck of cards for the tough for the welcome party, or part of the welcome party. And it's like, okay, fine. You know, I'm not going to worry about this exercise or that exercise, or, you know, oh my God, we're going to do burpees, you know, ruck burpees. Nope. Whatever we're doing, that one exercise, and I'm just going to focus on those reps for that exercise, for that card. That's it.
That's phenomenal advice. And I know a lot of people, myself included, can find ourselves thinking, you know, too far ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And then your mind starts wandering. You're like, can I really do all of this? And I mean, just like you said, taking it one thing at a time, look at the card, the workouts, don't think about the rest of the cards. Can you finish that one card? Yes. Okay. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Next card comes.
Yeah.
Can I finish this card? Yes. All right. Let's do it.
Yep. Absolutely. You know, it's the same way, you know, Doug, you know, doing some of the workouts with Doug has been a good prep for that kind of mindset too, because, you know, if you start worrying about or thinking about what crazy things are going to come up with next, you can really get yourself psyched out. You know, your mind will start convincing you that, you know, no, this is a bad idea. You can't do this. Your body's not ready. Your body's not going to take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'll give you a good Doug story. Cause we do a couple days a week, from our work office, we'll actually go out and do like a lunchtime ruck workout. And if the weather's really bad, we have a parking garage, so we don't have to go out in the rain. We can just work out in the parking garage. Of course, about the only thing you really do at the parking garage is think of the stairs. So there's eight flights of stairs in the parking garage to go from the ground floor to the top. And we were doing a workout in there one time a couple of years ago, and we'd already made trips up and down with rucks and sandbags or whatever, and we get back, you know, down to this one floor, and Doug says, okay, get rid of all the weight. And I'm thinking, okay, sandbags. And he says, no, get rid of your rucks too. You know, and initially you kind of, your mind goes, oh good, I got rid of all this weight. And immediately it's like, wait a minute, what are you doing? Why are we getting rid of this? And we went down to the ground floor, and there were only three of us that day, and we proceeded to do reverse bear crawl up the stairs, all eight flights.
That is brutal.
It was ugly. It was very much, Doug finished it first. You know, he let off and finished it first, and I was trailing behind by a good couple flights, and I literally between myself and Steve Haas was the other guy working out with us that day, and you know, they're both beasts. And I was to the point mentally, like if either one of them had said, okay, I'm done, or, you know, I would have been right there with them. But it was like, well, okay, if he's not going to quit, then I'm not going to quit, you know.
Yeah.
I had a lot of other choice words too, but I won't. I'll keep it clean. Man. But that's the kind of stuff that he will throw into, a lot of his workouts that he'll lead. You know, that really, really push you beyond that comfort zone.
Eight flights of reverse bear crawls will definitely push you outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah. I had rubber bands for arms by the time we got to the top of that, for sure.
I bet. So this was your first HTL.
Yep.
I mean, congratulations again on finishing that up.
Thanks.
Do you have, advice, things that worked for you for getting between the events, or advice, recommendations for people who are thinking of tackling their first HTL, either things that worked for you or things that you wish someone might have told you beforehand?
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of good advice from Doug. I mean, he's done multiple of those.
Does he give out bad advice?
Obviously.
I don't think that guy gives out any bad advice. I'm sure everything he says is good.
Oh, man. But, the Steve Haas, I mentioned, I mean, he and I worked together. He did, HTL in Chicago for D-Day. And so he'd given me some good tidbits on, just your gear. You know, the last thing you want to have to do between the events is be scrambling around trying to figure out, what are you going to wear? I mean, I basically had a set of clothes laid out for each event. So that as soon as I got back there, okay, I don't have to think about what clothes I'm going to wear for this next evolution. It's already laying there. All I got to do is shower and change. And then shoe-wise, I had a second pair of shoes ready to go too, because you never know. I mean, you don't know, and it's all weather dependent. You know, you could end up with your shoes are just muddy and wet and, crummy because somebody decided we're going to go down in a river. Or who knows? So, or you have a problem with one of your shoes and it's torn up. You know, so I had an extra pair of shoes there ready to go, and they weren't like brand new, never warm. I'd worked out in them for a few weeks beforehand to get some miles on them and make sure they broke in. Having somebody there, if you got somebody you've been training with, I think that, it's kind of like an accountability partner for a workout. You know, you're going to be a lot less inclined to say, oh, I'm just not feeling it. I think I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to make this an HZL instead of an HTL. Right.
Yep.
You know, so you got kind of that accountability, and, I had Bill with me, and, there was a couple other guys we were doing this with that were like right in a hotel right next door, and we're all carpooling together. And so there's a lot of messaging going back and forth, making sure everybody's got their head screwed on straight. Training wise, I'll give Brian Singlin a plug for that HTT stuff, the heavy drop training that he's been programming and selling, you know, 6 week blocks of programming. Doug did it, of course, and then started telling, you know, the rest of us about it. And, you know, Steve and I both did, you know, a couple runs through that. And I think just the volume, you know, I signed up and did the sandbag and ruck combo, training pack. And my gosh, the volume of work that you get each week, because it's three full workouts each week, plus a, he calls it a care package, but it's not a care package. It's death. It's some kind of like 30-minute AMRAP with the sandbag where you're just grinding yourself down, you know, but doing that kind of high volume workout, I noticed a tremendous improvement just after the first one that I did over the summer. And I could tell the difference too when I did the Extortion 1-7, did that tough light. I could tell that it paid off quite a bit.
Yeah, he's got a great program there. I've gone through the sandbag ruck combo once, and I've gone through the I think it's just the ruck one once.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got those things. Those workouts are.
Yep. Yeah, those are really good. You know, besides that stuff, try and do some lifting like a couple days a week, just the basic, you know, Olympic lift stuff. But the other thing that I've been doing for the last year and a half is this Orange Theory. I don't know if you've run across that yet or not, but it's basically a heart rate driven workout. And it's a kind of a gym that it's trainer led sessions. It's basically one trainer leading, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40 people at a time. So you have to pre-book, you know, your time slot. You know, it's a scheduled class. You show up, you got your heart rate monitor on, and then the entire time you're working out, you can look up at a big screen and you can see what zone your heart rate's in. And, you know, they say that like 84% to 92%, you know, your max heart rate, that's the orange zone. So you're going to get a good, you know, you're not only getting a good workout, but you'll get a good post-workout metabolic burn after. So I hit that once a week. And one of the things I noticed after doing the HTT for 6 weeks is my heart rate, my recovery rate on my heart rate during the orange class was much better than what it had been. You know, I'm 49 years old. It used to take like 2 or 3 minutes after coming off of, you know, if you did a 500 meter row or something, and my heart rate's pegged, and it'd take 2 or 3 minutes for my heart rate to come back down to, you know, 70 percentile kind of area. And now, easily within a minute, I'll have a good heart rate recovery.
And it's always such a great feeling to see training pay off in measurable amounts like that. Well, before we get going, is there anything else that you want to bring up about the event or any other shout outs that you want to give?
You know, I guess definitely give a plug for all the Santa Ruck stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Make sure everybody's hitting their, whether they're doing it here in Indy or they're going to do one of the remote ones, make sure they get in on that. I mean, that's nothing but goodness.
Absolutely. And it's Santa Ruck's happening in a number of cities. I'll put a link in the show notes to the Team Ninja website, link for that. But I know that we've got one in Seattle. There's definitely one in Indy, like there is every year. And then I think there's Philly, DC, St. Paul. I just pulled it up. Austin, Charlotte, Nashville, Tallahassee, Orlando. And that's a lot of cities. So if you're listening and you're close to one of those cities, please check the show notes or head over to teamninja.org and check out the Santa Ruck, because it's a custom light event and it's a ton of fun and it benefits charities. So it's cool.
Yeah. I'd say the only other thing I forgot about this, so during the tough, Shredder had us cross this old, you know, it's a non-active railroad line, but there's still this old bridge that goes across the river. And it's a good 50-yard stretch across there. And it's, you know, just railroad ties and then the rails. And there's 6 to 8 inch gaps between the railroad ties where you can just look right straight down to the river. So we're not, you know, there's no handrail. There's no, you know, nice safety walk across there. It's paying attention to how you step across this thing. So anyway, Shredder made us cross that. And there was, I won't say who, there was an individual in the group that is deathly afraid of heights. And crossing that thing just was made a wreck of that. That individual ended up crawling across the whole way. So that was during the tough. But during the light, I mentioned we're, you know, it's dark. We've got this three-mile movement that we got time hack on, and we're coming back. We're going right by that same bridge on our route. But we're not going to cross it. Well, at the last minute, Shredder comes up and gives instructions to the team lead for us to cross it in the dark. And his whole intent, because we've had some messaging back and forth afterwards, but his whole intent, he basically made the decision that he was going to help this individual try to get a better grip on and overcome that fear of heights. And it worked out. It actually worked out well. The person was able to walk across with somebody kind of working with them and helping them, and it didn't really slow us down at all, and you know, it worked out great. But I thought that was kind of cool that Shredder he did that instead of taking the other route, which is, you know, to say, okay, I'm not going to do that again. I want to, you know, he actually took it as an opportunity to try to help somebody, you know, work through some fears.
And I think that's just a huge testament to Cadre Shredder and I guess the types of cadre that GORUCK employs. I mean, what a thing to do on top of an event that's already benefiting, you know, tons of different groups.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought at the time, Shredder was close enough to hear my first WTF response when I heard that we were going to go across it in the dark. My thinking at the moment was not that was something beneficial, but yeah, you know, dialing back from the moment and looking at it now and what he was trying to accomplish with it, it's like, wow, that was cool. It was pretty phenomenal to do that and make it work out. So,
yeah, I think I have a lot of WTF moments at GORUCK events that when I look back on, I'm like, oh, you know, that makes sense now. But in the moment I'm like, like, is this seriously happening? Is this actually happening right now?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was neat.
Well, again, Andy, thank you so much for taking all this time out of your day to talk about the Indy HTL, not only your first heavy, but your first HTL event and everything that DS and Shredder did out there. And obviously the teams, the heavy class, the tough class, the light class, making a huge difference in the community. And like you said, when we were talking back and forth on Messenger, what an epic community service project. And I know that it definitely inspired me in what I consider the GORUCK community service action. And I hope people who are listening are inspired as well. Maybe some cadre will throw some additional events like this together.
To me, this should be simple. You can go on the calendar or the GORUCK calendar and look at the events in your city. Boom, you know when stuff's going down. All right, now I want to try to figure out different people I know around town that might know somebody that works at Parks Department, that might know somebody that works in city planning area or whatever, and say, hey, you know, is there a dilapidated city park or trail system or, you know, or whatever? Because my eyes have been opened up quite a bit on exactly what these service projects could entail and what you could do with that kind of manpower in a very short time.
Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Rock Off podcast. I really hope that you enjoyed this interview with Andy. This seems like an amazing event, and I'm just so glad that it went as well as it did. You can check out the show notes at alldayrockoff.com/podcast/episode-078. And on our page for that, we have pictures from the event. You can see a before and after, all the stuff they did, and really the impact that it had. It's really cool. As always, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you would leave a review on either iTunes or on our Facebook page. You can search for All Day Rock Off and it should come right up. If you have suggestions for upcoming future episodes or for ways to make the show better, or if you just want to reach out, you can always send me an email, Brian, spelled B-R-I-A-N, at alldayrockoff.com, or use the contact form on the website at alldayrockoff.com. Thank you so much again for the incredible support. And don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive and drink hard, rock harder.